Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Dota Obs podcast. I'm your host, Bobo. For today's episode, we are continuing our discussion of attack modifiers. If you remember last episode, we reviewed the basic definition of an attack modifier and went over the common modifiers found in the game. Well, for today's episode, we are going to go over on-hit effects, active attack modifiers, which are basically modifiers unique to heroes and units, and then we'll actually go over a little bit of history of modifiers themselves. So starting with on-hit effects, the definition of these is honestly is as it sounds. The effect is applied as the attack arrives at its target. Some heroes have passive abilities that work with on-hit effects. Evasion is useful against these effects because it can greatly nullify strengths of certain heroes. So some examples of on-hit effect abilities are Slark's Essence Shift, Sand King's Caustic Finale, and Venomancer's Poison Sting. All of these, so like we said, these effects only are applied if the attack lands successfully. If Slark misses his attack, no essence shift is stolen from the target that he gains. And then some items with on-hit effects are Shadowblade, which the on-hit effect is bonus damage on the first hit out of invisibility, and Silver Edge, which again has the bonus damage out of invisibility, but it also has True Strike and it breaks out of invisibility. This is why, you know, I think, as far as I know, that is the only item that also has the break component in the game, but I could be wrong. And with on-hit effects, they vary greatly in their utility and properties. We won't go over every single hero who has one and what the ability does. We're just touching on a few of the heroes that have these on-hit effects. And again, similar to the ones that have attack modifiers or the common modifiers that we've gone over, usually these heroes are really good in lane and are really good with training. Hence, Slark's Essence Shift, you know, although in my, you know, because of my experience, especially at lower level MMRs, is a lot of people are afraid of that because they see his agility stack starting to gain a lot. I mean, it's still overall for like a longer engagement. It definitely does. He is favored usually in that. Again, you know, the asterisk is always it depends, but usually this gives him a slight edge. And this is just knowing the hero and their strengths that you can play to or be wary of. And again, this is why it makes Venomancer a pretty good support in certain situations, or even a good three. He's a very versatile hero. I actually like Venomancer a lot. I think he's a lot of fun. Because his Poison Sting, it's an excellent passive. It's usually, honestly, I'm not sure actually what, if it's taken more level 1 or level, at level 1 or level 2. Between that or between his Poison Sting or his Venomous Gale. All of it depends on his position, your team composition, if you're being aggressive and trying to get a good first blood. An aggressive first blood, like when the bounty runes spawn. But the point is that as you know these heroes, and if it's an on-hit effect, then you can know, or when you're drafting, and then you see on the other team, if you do see like a Sand King or a Slark, then a possible item choice could be like a Butterfly or choosing a hero that has built-in evasion, because right there, if you do have a hero that has built-in evasion, like PA, then you inherently have a slight, maybe not a slight advantage, but you're already offsetting the opposing hero's strengths, if that makes sense. So this is why it's good to know a little bit about the on-hit effects and what heroes have them. Moving on to active attack modifiers. So an active attack modifier is a modifier that has to be actively used on every attack. I know that sounds redundant, and you probably heard the words active and modifier use a ton right there. But what I mean by this is these attacks can also be set to auto cast, so you don't have to manually cast them on every attack, When put on autocast, they count as a basic right-click attack. When manually casted, they partly act as casting a spell, meaning they do not draw creep aggro. Because if you notice in Dota, whenever you cast a spell, it does not cause creeps to attack you. So if there's this, that's why, like, I don't know, it was more common, I feel like, a lot of patches ago, but that's why, like, Zeus could walk up to you in lane and just keep casting his lightning at you and nothing, and the creeps would just keep hitting each other or keep attacking the hero, and he could just walk around the creep, wave and hit him. That was when he was more played as a four every now and then, but honestly, I don't think that's very, that I even hardly see Zeus in general, honestly, right now. But anyways, that's a, like, a short situation or a short illustration of how spells never draw aggro. However, though, when a active attack modifier, they do not count as a spell in any other scenario, meaning they cannot be used when attacking is restricted and do not proc anything that triggers spell casting. So that was probably confusing. So to help, or that sentence was probably confusing. So to help illustrate, let's take Pugna's Nether Ward. So how the Nether Ward works, I'm very sure that lots and lots of people already know how it works, but just to help, you know, try to illustrate this out in a very, maybe probably oversimplistic way. Whenever a hero within a certain vicinity casts a spell, it zaps them, causing damage, in short. So, you know, whenever you cast any sort of spell, you get zapped if you're close enough to it. However, if you're within the vicinity of the ward and you use an active attack modifier, the ward will not attack you since you didn't, quote, cast a spell. So, and then also, if a hero tries to attack while they are disarmed or attack another hero who cannot be attacked by basic right-click, for example, when they are in the ethereal form, again, from Pugna, or if they get, or if they use a ghost scepter on themselves or get hit with an E-blade, if they're in that form, you will not be able to attack them. Again, that's because these active attack modifiers are counted or qualified as a basic right-click attack. So you can see how it's like a little bit complex and why they're like, they're spells, but they're not spells, kind of, in short. I know it's, again, this might be a little confusing, but that's the sort of the mechanics of how they work. The effects of these modifiers vary, similar to common attack modifiers. Some of them stun, others do increased damage or slow. The most common effect you will see is damage over time, or another common term you'll hear for that is an acronym called DOT damage, which literally damage over time. So some heroes that have attack modifiers are Huskar with his burning spears, Viper with his poison attack, and Silencer with his glaives of wisdom. These heroes, again, as I've alluded to before, are very good in lane. They're even better in lane than heroes that have on-hit effects, because to get the on-hit effect, you have to literally right-click the hero for the on-hit effect to happen. But with these active attack modifiers, you don't have to literally right-click them. You can push the key, whichever key binding you have set to the ability, and then you can click the hero, and then it will count as a spell being cast on the hero, therefore making it a lot easier to attack them and to get trades with them throughout the laning stage, and to basically make their life miserable. You're basically getting free harass in lane because you're not drawing creep aggro. You will commonly see these heroes in either the mid lane or the off lane, because usually those lanes tend to be more about harassing the opposing hero. That doesn't mean they can't go to other lanes. Those lanes are just the most common ones that you'll find these heroes in. All right, and last, let's move on to the history of attack modifiers, because I know everybody's dying to know. I actually think it's kind of fun to learn about this, mainly because this stems from Warcraft 3, and I'll get more into that in a second. But I actually played Warcraft 3 a lot growing up. It was super fun. I think StarCraft was the first RTS game I played, and then I Switch, and then I started to play Warcraft as well, and it was super fun. And I played the custom games of both of those, and it was just a blast. Lion Tower Wars was always personally my favorite. I like that one. There's always a lot of fun Risk style games found in there. So anyways, so a little history lesson about the attack modifiers. So sometimes when performing this mechanic, you might hear the term orb walking. And honestly, if you've never heard that term, I'm not surprised, and it's probably on its way out at this point because it's a very old term. But when performing this action, you manually cast the effect rather than put it to auto cast, like we've already gone over. And that's what literally the term orb walking, that's where the term, like, that's what orb walking means. Is, again, manually casting the effects. The term orb comes from Warcraft 3, the game where Dota actually originated as a custom game when playing online or Battle.net. It was called Battle.net for Warcraft as well. I know it's called that for StarCraft, but I'm pretty sure it was Warcraft too. Yeah, because they were both Blizzard. Anyways, so unique attack modifiers were called orb effects in Warcraft 3. They were called this because the game had a few orb items that heroes could use, such as Orb of Venom or Orb of Corruption or Orb of Flames. And one characteristic of these orbs is they do not stack with each other. And I guess when I say one mechanic of these orbs, characteristic mechanic, I guess it's the same thing. But yeah, so they do not stack with each other. And the items being literal orbs in the game also kind of served as a metaphor because stacking orbs is very difficult and hard to do. So hence why the terms, I think that's partly where the term stacking came from as well. So since Dota is a custom game of Warcraft 3, it made use of these orb effects and put them into the game itself. But rather than having it tied exclusively to items, they gave it to some heroes too. Thus, the term orb was used to describe attack modifiers. You may sometimes see players perform what is called stutter stepping actions when attacking. And basically, what this is when the player immediately moves after performing an orb walking maneuver to cancel the backswing animation so they can move faster and get slightly better positioning. So, like a silent, for example, a Huskar will, right when he throws his burning spears, the player will instantly move just to get like slightly better, or I don't know, maybe to move further back or get closer. So it's a way it so it, so they're almost canceling the attack animation, but they're doing it right after the attack has been made. I used to be under the impression that this would increase your overall DPS since you could maybe squeeze out an additional attack every so often, but that is not the case. The hero still has the timing of the backswing built into them. Just you're just can't you all you're doing is just canceling the animation itself. The most common reason that again that he that people do this with heroes is simply positioning. It's one of those little aspects in Dota you can exploit to gain a slight advantage. It's not necessarily game breaking or, automatically wins you lanes if you are good at it, but it can help though. It's like those slight little things you can look for in the game and try to exploit to maybe, slowly move forward to get better positioning or move further away when you're kiting a hero, like if they're chasing you, like right when your hero like throws out their attack, then you keep running away. Then you turn around, then right they throw their attack, then you instantly start running away just to, maintain a little bit distance. It becomes a game of inches at that point. And again, it's not gonna automatically win you games, but the little things can help with it. Well, that is all we have for today. As always, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. I know this episode was a little different in regards to the things we went over. It's probably a little unorthodox or, things you probably have never even heard about in Dota, and honestly, maybe never even hear about again, but I always like to know, the little bit of tidbits here and there. Little embellishments kind of makes the game a little bit more interesting to kind of learn the history of it and these little, you know, mechanical histories that were brought about to, or, you know, that were in the very, very old version of the game that are not very common today. Hence, Venomancer's poison sting came from Orb of Venom from Warcraft. You know, you can kind of see it there. Obviously, it's been tweaked a lot and it scales and it has different applications. So it's not literally the Orb of Venom, but you know, that's partly where it came from. They literally gave the mechanics and the application of Orb of Venom and directly gave it onto a hero to help further the identity of the hero itself. I think it's kind of fun to learn about, and it's, you know, it's just little things, little fun things to know about. But overall, you know, I know the episode was different, so I really hope you learned something and this was informative to you in some way, or that you just enjoyed it. You know, that's the one thing I hope most of all. Always appreciate your support, and again, for you taking the time to listen, it means a lot. If you ever have any questions, again, you can reach out to, you can reply to these posts on Reddit. And if there's ever anything you want me to research or look into more that you want to know about, but I don't want to take the time to go into, by all means, let me know. It's greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for listening. Good luck and have fun in your games.